G'day team, welcome to another installment of your favourite podcast. I don't know that, do I? It could be your third, it could be your fourth, it could be your first time here. If you're a long time, first time or medium time, hello, welcome to the U Project. Hope you're great, hope you're enjoying your day, your morning walk, your workout, your bloody zen time, whatever it is that you do when you listen to this, your drive to work, your drive home, your time on the train, or if you're in Melbourne, your time in isolation. Hi, Tiffany.
Hello, Harps. How are you?
I'm really good. How's your, what is it? It's Sunday. It's 1:35 in the PM Sunday here. And we just soldier on because we can.
It's what we do. It's what we do, Harps.
What have you been doing? What have you done? So it's just after lunchtime, as I said, or it depends what time you eat lunch. What have you been doing this morning?
I went for an early morning walk with the coach. We went for a bit of a march around Elwood and then I did a little bit of work and then I went out and I had a workout with someone. So that was great.
Did you? Wow. Yeah. Is that breaking the law or is that legal now?
No, that's definitely legal. Legal now. Yeah.
Well, and of course, if you don't know Tiff well, then you don't know her dog and her dog is the coach. So she's not talking about a human who coaches her. She's talking about an animal who adores her and follows her around like it's the last time she's ever going to see her ever again.
She's just like a little leech, you know. Last night I thought I'd have a night off from the worky stuff and I thought I'd do some sketching. And so I sat up and I put some tunes on and then she sat right next to me staring. She goes like a statue, completely still, big wide eyes, ears are up, and then she just squeaks like she needs WD-40 on her joints. She just makes a squeaky noise. And I'm like, you know, 24/7. I'm here.
Where does the squeakiness come from? Her mouth?
Yeah. She's like,
what is she telling you when she's squeaking like a bloody barn door? What is that message?
She's like, oh, you're doing something. You should come and do something with me. And she'll bring a toy and she'll put it on my knee and then she'll just look at me.
How old is the coach?
She's five and a half.
What's the typical lifespan for a whippet?
I'm hoping by the time she gets there, it's going to be 100 years old. I think about it way too often.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's maybe, I don't know, 12 or 15.
Isn't it funny how, like, she's here now, she's young, she's healthy, you've got her, and understandably, but we still think, or you still think more than you should about when she's going to die.
Yeah, a lot, because...
Yeah. Which creates anxiety and it takes you out of the joy of what you have right now, which is her.
You know when it gets me? It gets me when she does that stupid stuff and she'll come up and she'll put her paws literally around my neck like a hug and she'll nuzzle her big long snout into my neck and then she'll make the same noises that I make when I'm carrying on with her, which is like, and she does that. And my heart explodes and I feel like these feelings that I've never felt so much before. And then I just love it. And then I go, oh, this can't last forever. And it hurts.
Wow.
So
that's
it's like bliss and terror at the same time. It's like, oh, whoever knew this could feel like this. And then it was like, oh, they don't live as long as humans.
That's the dichotomy of love. It's terrifying and glorious.
Yeah.
It's glorious in the moment because it just makes you feel shit you never feel. And it's terrifying because you know that maybe, definitely with a dog, one day that's not going to be there anymore. And so, and this is one of the challenges, isn't it, about managing our mind in the moment and just being in the moment and going, right now, this is joyful and this is glorious and this is beautiful. And well, it's interesting you say that because that's what we're talking about is the mind today amongst other things. But it is literally we can, in the middle of something that is amazing and good and like beautiful, we can with our mind transport ourselves out of that into something negative. Despite the reality, the practical reality of the situation we're in, I'm at home. I have this dog that's healthy, that loves me. I've never felt this level of connection with another living thing, perhaps, or definitely not with an animal. We'll discount your family because that's a different story, but I've never felt, have you ever felt that level of love and connection?
No way.
Right. And so that's like beautiful but terrifying.
Yeah. And it's so funny that you actually bring it up and we talk about it like this, because last night was one of the times where I even then just pondered, you know, you ask what a lifespan is, but then I was like, who am I? Who am I to think and assume that just because that's the lifespan, that that's going to be my story, that that's going to be, that that my dog's going to live healthily till old age? Because we don't know.
No, no, but we always prepare ourselves. Like, on the one hand, we talk a lot about, especially in 2021, and, you know, we talk about being in the moment and we talk about embracing the now and all of that stuff, which I get, and finding the good. And, but all, there's always part of our brain that's saying, yes, but this is momentary. And there's that part of your brain, because your brain is kind of really built for survival and to anticipate danger slash threat slash disappointment, adversity, and to prepare you for that. So part of you wants to just be in the moment. Part of your brain, part of your soul, part of your emotional system wants to just be bathing in the love and adoration and connection with this other, you know, creature, living creature. But also your brain's going, yeah, don't get too used to it though, because it's not going to fucking last forever. And so you go, yeah, yeah. So I don't want to relax and enjoy too much, because then when it stops, I'll be fucking devastated and I don't know if I'll recover.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, that's vulnerability. Vulnerability is going, I'm just going to let go now. And when it, whatever happens, happens, I'll just figure it out. Because you can't, I mean, you can, but it's not a great way to go through life, not letting yourself just feel and just be in the moment. And just, if you are, you know, in the middle of something beautiful, whatever that is, whether that's nature or whether that's a relationship or whether or not that's some kind of spiritual awakening or journey, is that's the one of the challenges. And I want to talk today about managing the mind, because, you know, so that the title, the working title of this, I don't know if it'll be at the end, but my concept was understanding you, right? And, you know, it's so interesting in these podcasts, in all of these conversations I have, we have with, you know, scientists and researchers and psychologists and performers and entrepreneurs and comedians and actors and high performers and regular people in inverted commas and mums and dads and people who have, you know, beaten addiction. We talk about a range of things, you know, relevant to the human experience, but really, like, the ever-present part of being human is that we're thinking, that we're processing data, that we're filtering the world around us, and that you know, the ever-present reality for everyone. Like, a lot of things vary greatly person to person, situation, circumstance, environment, wealth, income, job, relationship status, you know. But the one thing that is common is that all of us have tens of thousands of thoughts a day. All of us are constantly in a state of cognition, of thinking, of processing data, of anticipating, you know, joy and pain. And you think, and I've spoken about this many times, but I want to unpack it on a deep level today, because I think we don't have enough space between us and our thinking. Mm-hmm. And we confuse our reality, our personal reality, with the reality. Right? We confuse our reality with their reality, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's this kind of, I was thinking, how can I explain this? Because I know sometimes I explain stuff when we're talking about mind management. By the way, I believe that if you can't manage your mind, or at least, you know, for the most part, manage your mind, you really can't manage your life effectively. You can't manage your body. You can't manage your business, your career, your relationships, your money, because your mind, that decision-making part of you, that data interpreting part of you, is the platform for all of our choices and behaviors, mm-hmm. for the most part, all of mm-hmm. our conscious choices and behaviors anyway. You know, like we don't accidentally eat McDonald's, as I've said, we don't accidentally not go to the gym. We don't accidentally call someone a fuckwit. We don't accidentally punch someone in the face. We don't accidentally not go to school, or, you know, we don't accidentally get a PhD, or we don't accident, you know, these are all conscious things, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of things we do on autopilot, but it's recognizing the difference between what is happening in my external world. So I want to break it down today, and this will be a bit of a lecture slash tutorial. Tiff, you jump in and out. Mm-hmm. I'll probably talk too much, but so I want
nothing
you to
new harps, nothing so new there.
I want you to think about this, and I want our listeners to think about this too. So I want you to picture an analog clock, not a digital, an old-fashioned clock. And in the middle of the clock, of course, is that round bit where the hands come out from, the very center of the clock, mm-hmm. just that round circle-y thing. And then I want you to picture, you know, 1, 2, 3, all the way round back to 12. So we've got the middle of the clock, and then we've got 12 points on the clock around the circumference, mm-hmm. right? Now, I want you to picture all of those 12 numbers on the clock as different human beings. So this is a metaphor. So each of those 12 points on the clock is a different person. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say that clock is now a round room, and it's not hanging on the wall. We're literally sitting in a round room, and now in the middle of that round room is that central point again, but now we've got those 12 people around the room. Now, let's say something happens in the middle of the room. Someone says something, or there's an event, mm-hmm. or there's a stimulus. And this is what happens all the time in our external world. Something happens. Like, for example, before we started, you said, my watch is going off because your heart rate sitting in the chair was 114, right?
Yes.
Now, what was the stimulus? The stimulus was, you sat down with me to do a podcast, right?
Yeah.
Right? Now, this is a perfect example. And sometimes you get, not because we don't get on well or not, but sometimes you get a little bit anxious for a moment, right?
Or excited, perhaps.
Excited, whatever. But here's the point. You sat down and your watch started beeping and you go, that's funny. 9 times out of 10 when that happens, it's when I'm sitting here, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. So what was the external stimulus? The external stimulus was you're sitting down with me to do a podcast. What was the personal reaction? The personal reaction was your heart rate went up, your watch beeped, right? And there's maybe a little bit of underlying whatever, curiosity, excitement, anxiety, whatever, but now the watch has stopped beeping. It's changed.
Yeah.
What's my long-winded point? So we've got the 12 people around the room. Same room, same day, same time. In the middle, something happens. There's a stimulus. It could be an event. It could be a situation that arises in the middle of that space. It could be something someone says. Mm. It could be some kind of revelation that everyone becomes apparent of in the moment. So we've got the stimulus, and then we've got on the very outside the numbers. In between the stimulus in the middle and the people on the outside, we've got 2 steps, maybe 3. So we've got the thing that happens, and then each individual tells themselves a story about what that means. So we call that interpretation or processing. Mm. So like, for example, let's say I'm in the middle of the room, which I wouldn't do this, but I say the C word, right?
You
now we know that that's
got,
no. I say the C word and I'm in the middle of the room, then fuck, we've got 12 people around the room. One person, everyone then goes, I can't believe he said that word in a sentence. Then everyone around the room, depending on who they are, they start to interpret that. Now, by the way, this is not about the C word. This is about a stimulus. Everybody tells themselves a story about what I just said, about whether or not that's appropriate or inappropriate, whether or not that's offensive or funny. In other words, they give a stimulus meaning, right? Then, so there's an interpretation and then there's a reaction, right? So there's the stimulus. Then there's, I tell myself a story about the stimulus. then there's a reaction, and the reaction could be a mental, a psychological reaction, or an emotional reaction, or a behavioral reaction. It could be fear, or it could be laughter, or it could be a decision that I make, or an action that the person takes. And then the fourth bit is that there's an outcome. And the outcome is that my personal reality, or the person's personal reality, then will be better or worse. An argument could ensue, or there could be some learning that takes place. There could be some growth, or there could be some anxiety, or there could be elevated heart rate and blood pressure, right? So all of the time around us, things are happening in the world, situation, circumstance, environment, people, swearing, COVID, government, as I've said all of these things many times. Mm. And then we tell ourselves a story about it, but we don't even know we're telling ourselves a story. Mm-hmm. We're just assuming that's what it means. And we don't have the awareness in the moment that, no, this is just my version. This is just my window, and the only person who thinks like me is me. So when one of the people sitting around, one of the 12 people sitting around the room hears that word and they go, this is offensive, then their literal experience is that they are offended. And maybe now they're a bit angry. And maybe now they like me less. And maybe now they think I'm a dickhead. And maybe now they want to leave the room. And all of that is completely understandable based on their interpretation. Mm. Somebody else in the room thinks it's kind of funny. Which I'm not saying it's funny. I'm just saying someone thinks it's kind of funny and they're smirking and they're laughing, but they don't want to laugh because other people don't think it's funny. So they're trying to cover it up. And their experience, their reaction is that, you know, they're amused. And so there's this ever present dynamic exchange of in the world, there's this ever present dynamic exchange of and continuum of things happening and then humans giving those things meaning. Mm. And the challenges come when we think that our meaning, like I said, is the meaning. When I think, like, for example, I wrote something yesterday which I want to read, then I'll shut the fuck up and let you ask whatever question you have. But I wrote something yesterday. And this is a thing I do often. I often write things for social media that I feel really strongly about. And I think, wow, if somebody would just read this and consider it without prejudice, or because I'm not trying to steer anyone in a direction, I'm actually trying to do the opposite. I'm actually trying to help us become aware of the way that we bring certain biases and certain values into every data processing moment, including me. I do that as well. And so we're really talking about open-mindedness and objectivity, which is virtually impossible for humans because we're not clean slates. But I wrote this and I thought, yeah, I like this because I was watching just a whole bunch of people get offended online about what someone put up. Now, firstly, someone doesn't matter what someone put up. But I didn't agree with it, but it doesn't matter. It didn't offend me. Like, here's the thing. If things offend us when we tell ourselves a story that that's offensive. But also we think at the same time, well, if I don't find it offensive or I don't get, in inverted commas, offended, then I'm endorsing it. Well, no, that's not true either. That's just another story, right? So I think we need to be really careful how we respond and how we manage our reactions and emotions around things. So I wrote this. I wrote, the title was The Psychology of Being Offended. And I wrote, when I say fuck to an audience of 100 and one person is offended but 99 are not, it becomes apparent that being offended happens via a subjective interpretation of a stimulus, in this case a word, rather than the stimulus itself. If the cause of the offense was the word itself, then everyone, 100 people, would have been offended because they were all exposed to the same word or stimulus at the same time. It isn't, and they weren't, because all of us have our own unique data processing center called the human mind, the place where we internally assess external events. And before anyone misinterprets where I'm going here, I'm not talking about what is or isn't offensive per se, but rather how we individuals label, interpret, and give meaning to certain inbound stimuli. In this hypothetical example, four letters assembled in a certain order. This is an exercise in metacognition, thinking about thinking. So this gives rise to the question, to whom do we cater, the one or the 99? And before anyone interprets this message as an endorsement or criticism of any particular behavior, philosophy, or cause, it is not. And I should know because I wrote it. It is literally an analytical glimpse into an ever-increasing part of our culture, which is being offended. And I wrote that and I thought, that's as clear and as unbiased and as what's the word? Not the right word, but scientific as I can write it, right? Where we're going, okay, it's not about the thing. It's just about the way that our brain, more specifically our mind, works. And I went to post it and I thought, no, people will still find a reason to get offended. So I didn't post it, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the thing is having an awareness of like trying to understand, and this is not like I was thinking today about me understanding me.
Yeah.
And you understand, like Tiffany Ann Cook understanding herself. Your drivers, what compels you, what your values are, what you stand for, what you want your life to look like, not what your parents or your friends or your peers or social media or not what anyone or anything else suggests your life should be like, but you, like what really matters to you. And we pay so much attention to everything else that sometimes I think we lose connection with our own internal wisdom.
What I'm thinking, about wanting to unpack is because I think about you, like you have definitely done a deep dive on this and you've got a lot of clarity of all of like how deep this goes in terms of our thinking, our behaviors, our biology, our neurobiology, our interactions with people, how we see the world, how we create the world. I've definitely spent a lot of my life and especially lately, I mean, this topic is generally the focus of most of my conversations. But then I think about before it was when I was curious and wanted to have control of being a better me, but with the level of understanding I had. And so maybe can we unpack some of the mechanics, some of the components? What is our thinking and how is that separate to us? What is our thinking and what is the relationship between thinking and our emotions, thinking and our body, thinking and our story? And how do we change our thinking? So when you first, I guess, interpret that my reality is because of my thinking, that can be a real punch in the face for someone who's got a shitty reality. So the first response can be get stuffed, like what's my fault? Oh, my life is shit because it's my fault because I've got shitty thinking. You know, so it's how do we start to navigate that and understand it all as something that happens because of us and in spite of us?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Or did
I know where you, look, it's complicated. Yeah. It's right. And I get it, even in your question, but I get it, right? Okay, so let me unpack bits and pieces and you interrupt when you want, right? Mm. I really don't want this to be a cliche podcast of an interviewee. I want it to be a real raw, almost like a coaching session for you if you want. Mm. Right. So there's a big difference between, you know, when I say, oh, my reality's shit and that's a byproduct of my thinking, right? I wouldn't necessarily say that, but you could in some instances say that, but you need to differentiate between situation and circumstance and internal reality because some people are in a good situation and circumstance, but their personal reality, feelings, emotions, internal state, mindset, happiness, pain, joy, you know, overthinking, self-loathing, their personal reality on a cognitive, emotional, and perhaps spiritual level sucks, right? Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that they're in a good situation. So I think we need to differentiate between what's going on externally and what's going on internally. Mm. And this podcast is really about what's happening internally and how do we manage that? Because conversely, you know, and I know people who from the outside looking in, you would say, or I wouldn't, or you wouldn't, but many people might say, well, they're not really crushing it. They're not really killing it because they're not living there, earning that, driving that. In other words, by typical standards, by typical societal standards, they're not successful. Nonetheless, in the middle of their unsuccessful, apparently unsuccessful life, they are happy. They are content. They are learning. They are joyful. Mm-hmm. Not all the time, but for the most part. And in fact, for the most part, their internal state is more positive than many people who are living in the mansion. Which is not to say it's about the mansion, and it's not to say it's about the poverty, it's whatever, right? It's just understanding that there is a disconnect between what is happening in, or there can be a disconnect between what's happening in our external and internal, and one doesn't necessarily equal the other, which is why I always say that, for me anyway, and people need to make up their own mind about this, but for me, success is definitely an inside-out process, not an outside in. Mm-hmm. And I think we grow up in the model and the paradigm and the mindset and the culture and the programming that success is about what happens in your physical three-dimensional world, job situation, circumstance, income, brand, what people think of you, reputation, relationships, you know, children, schools, results, all of that stuff. But rarely do we talk about success as what's happening within someone. It's always without.
Mm.
And that works until you get the shit and then you go, well, oh, now, does that mean that none of the external stuff matters? Of course not. Of course, there is a level. Of course, anyone living who's on the street, as we spoke with Norm McGillivray recently, of course your environment has an impact,
mm-hmm.
right? But there comes a point where, for many Australians and many people in other countries around the world, where you would say, well, for that person or for me or for most of my friends, for the most part, we're not living anywhere close to poverty, right? Where, you know, we're all, you know, I've got a warm bed and electricity and hot and cold water and a shower and I've got a job and a few bucks and I've got a car, right? So it's kind of the beyond that point is trying to understand the relationship. The next thing where you spoke about the difference between thinking and emotions and body, you know, there's that, or thinking and feeling, I guess, there's the, and they are quite often at odds where you might on an intellectual level know that you are definitely good enough to sit on this show, the You Project, which has got a big audience, and sit and go back and forwards with me and have a good conversation and be just as informative and if not more than me. And, you know that because you've done it lots of times. But there might be, and there probably isn't, but there might be part of you that every now and then goes, what the fuck am I doing? You know, you feel insecure or you feel inadequate or, right? And so that we know that these feelings of inadequacy or insecurity or self-doubt or even self-loathing can coexist with the knowledge, in other words, the historical evidence that, oh, well, I'm actually good enough to do this because Harps and I have already done 100 podcasts and I'm still here and I'm getting, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and because, you know, even, and I've mentioned this maybe 10 times now, but I'll just keep mentioning it because it tells us how long, and this is, it's been happening way longer than this, but, you know, like the title of this is to, you know, is understanding you. Well, 2,500 years, Socrates, you know, said to know thyself. So in other words, to understand you is the beginning of wisdom.
Mm.
Like he was talking 2,500 years ago, he's a dude, he's a philosopher who's teaching people that it is super important that you understand yourself. And why? Because that's the beginning of wisdom. Because when I believe when we start to understand ourselves, like why do I react like that? Why do I think like that? Why am I offended when he said that? And he didn't mean to. And even if he did, why do I give him that power? why do I care so much about what that lady thinks that doesn't like me anyway? Why do I want to please that person that doesn't like me? What is that about? Why do I care more about what they think of my behavior than I think of my behavior? Why am I, you know, and all of these kind of self-searching and self-awareness kind of inner dialogues and questions are good doors to open. You know, we don't want to be perpetually down the rabbit hole of who am I and what's my life about. But at the same time, I think conversely, so many of us go through life not questioning things that we could and should question.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are these actually my beliefs, or did I just adopt these beliefs because they are, that's the belief system that I grew up in the middle of? Like, I believe A, B, C because mum and dad and grandma and grandpa believed A, B, and C, and that was the culture that I was raised in. And so now that's my path, or that's my, and maybe it should be, but also maybe we could go, well, I don't know. I don't know that I agree with that. And it's okay that I don't agree.
Yeah.
But we have this sense of sometimes this weird sense of guilt and disloyalty if we have a different opinion or philosophy or theology to someone that we love. Like, I love my mum and dad more than any two people in the world. I disagree with them about lots of shit, but I don't love them any less.
Yeah.
And not only do I disagree with them on lots of things, I don't want them to change because what they believe works for them. You with me?
Yes.
Like, my mum and dad have certain spiritual and religious beliefs which for them work. Now, I can promise you that even if I had absolute evidence, which I don't and I can't, but even if I had absolute evidence that what they believe is bullshit, I would never even think about telling them. Because what would be the point? Now, if their belief, which by the way, could be right and I could be wrong, of course, if their belief gives them joy, contentment, comfort, confidence, if their beliefs and their thinking about the things that I vary on, if their thinking makes their life better, then I would be a horrible person if I was trying to change that, and I'm not, and I wouldn't, because ultimately we all live in the reality that we create with our mind. I'm not talking about the situation, that's the external, but the reality that we create with our mind, like where we do life is in the physical plane, but where we live for the most part is in thoughts, feelings, emotions, joy, pain, pleasure, you know, creativity, excitement, you know, that's where we live.
Do you know, I think when we first, I think a lot of people from my biased, listen to me, everybody, no, well, me, I found that when I wanted to first change my thinking all those years ago and that was a focus, I believe at the time what I really wanted was to not feel the uncomfortable stuff. So when a lot of people perhaps start that journey of, oh, I've got to change my thinking, really we're just trying another way to avoid negative feelings, avoid insecurity, avoid not being enough. And it's only really been the recent years that has changed for me, and that to change my thinking is to just accept that there will always be some fucking big waves to ride. Mm. Like, there'll always be some really tough emotions to go through, and sometimes it's just a case of sitting back and realizing it and not even necessarily doing something about it. I always wanted to fix. I always wanted answers, and I always wanted to be on the path to, if I see something, got to fix it. I mean, you would have known those first few years when I was badgering you from the bamboo, how many times would I raise the question about self-awareness, what next? Like, self-awareness, what's the point? I've learnt this stuff and now I don't know what to do with it because I'm so busy fixing and finding answers and doing stuff, but I'd, you know, I had just had to learn to sit with it and understand it and let it be.
Mm. And also, yeah, and also being aware of your behaviors and aware of your idiosyncrasies and not needing to fix it by tomorrow or to change it or to be able to go, oh, okay, well, I wanted to lose 10 kilos and I lost 10 kilos and now I'm still not happy. So I want to lose 5 more kilos and now I lose 5 more. Now I've lost 15. All right. Well, now I'm leaner and lighter and I'm healthier but I'm still not happy. I still think I'm ugly and I don't like my body. And when people compliment me, I deflect and blah, 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 blah. Oh, okay. Maybe this is not about my body.
Uh-huh.
Maybe my body is just kind of involved. Maybe this is about what's happening. Maybe this is about my story. Maybe this is about my belief. Maybe this is, what is my story? What is my thinking around this? Not because we focus so much on the physiology. We focus so much on the dollar. We focus so much on the outcome. Mm. We focus so much on the situation. We focus so much on the likes. I do it. I have to stop myself from going to fucking Wooshka every 5 minutes to see what the numbers are doing because I can, but it's true. Yeah. This is being human. And I catch myself now, folks, if you're wondering what's Wooshka, Wooshka tells me how many listens we've had today on the show. And I need to be careful that I'm not talking and recording and sharing, which I don't, but I'm not getting enamored with numbers and compromising what it is I want to do on this show, right? And so I believe this is a real path of, and I don't mean I'm on a path of, but I believe this is the beginning of opening the door on real self-awareness and enlightenment is just becoming like the beginning of awareness, like self-awareness, that is you starting to understand you. Mm. The beginning of that is to recognize and acknowledge your lack of awareness. Right. Mm-hmm. And to realize, like, even with when I see people, you know, respond and I don't care about the topic or that I care about the reaction.
Yes.
I want to talk to people. I want to, and even in myself, when I feel incited or I feel like fuck, or I want to fucking punch somebody on the nose, or I would never, right? Probably.
Anyone that even says punch someone on the nose probably doesn't punch anyone.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'm a lover, right? But I recognize these things in me and I go, oh, what is that? Or even why do I think I'm so right about this?
Mm-hmm.
It's like I said before when I was talking about my mum and dad's beliefs, I go, oh, and by the way, I could be wrong. You know, I think this need to be certain and this need to be right, it's an emotional and a psychological prison that we build for ourselves. Mm. And so we attach ourselves to certain ideas. Sometimes that's a good thing and certain values, and also sometimes that's a good thing, but not always. And here's where it can be bad. When I think that my belief system about, for example, how to eat, I think my belief system, how I eat is how everyone should eat. And I've done research and I've read a bunch of academic papers and I've spoken to a lot of experts in the field. And I've come to these conclusions that anyone who eats like
almonds.
Yeah. Anyone who doesn't eat like me or have my food philosophy is wrong. And not only are they wrong, let's escalate that. They're dickheads, they're morons, and anyone who comes on with an opinion that's not mine or an argument, even if somebody presents evidence in inverted commas, I'm not going to read it. I'm not going to acknowledge it because I live in an echo chamber. Mm. I'm a slave to a thing called confirmation bias. Yes. And so many people are slaves to confirmation bias without even knowing what they are because they are so crippled by and fearful of the idea that what they believe could be either completely fucking wrong or a bit wrong. They'll just attack anybody that doesn't think or believe or behave like them.
Mm.
On the other side of that, when you go through life going, well, this is my belief system. That's your belief system. I respect your belief system. I don't agree with it, but guess what? That's okay. And also, by the way, guess what? I could be wrong. And, but also guess what? We're friends. And guess what? I love you. It doesn't matter if you're an atheist and I think Jesus is coming soon, you know, or you're a Muslim or you're a Jehovah's Witness or whatever. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You know, like this is one of the problems, one of the many problems with managing the mind is we think that what's in my mind is right and what's in your mind is wrong. And if your mind isn't a reflection of mine, then we can't connect or we need to argue or we're mortal enemies. And it's this thinking about, again, product of the mind, it's this thinking about how right we are that creates division. You know, when someone has a different belief to me, if I think it's completely fucking ridiculous, which sometimes I do, I'm still not going to argue with them. I'll respect the person.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into it. I don't want to. It doesn't, it's like when people say to me, why don't you speak up about fill in the blank? I don't because I don't think, well, not I don't think, I believe it's not going to create anything big picture. It's not create any positive shift, right? And I'm not interested in, and I know that if I speak up about a particular issue and I take a stand one way or the other on pick a hot topic, I know there'll be probably an almost equal number of people who go, yeah, Harps, fucking oath, and then you're a dickhead, unfriending, right? Because people want to pick a team. Yeah. I don't want to pick a team. Doesn't mean I don't have opinions or ideas, but I don't want to belong to teams. I want to belong. The only team I want to belong to is the one that thinks critically and clearly for themselves. So there's no prerequisite kind of programming or belief to belong. You know, what about the human club where we're all, yeah, of course we're different. Of course we have different theology, philosophy, biology, psychology, emotions, spirituality. Of course there's a fucking, you know, it's a fruit salad of humanity. That's what we are. We're a fucking shit fest of different stuff.
But, and the thing is about teaching or sharing or trying to get awareness like this conversation, you know, we hope is that it doesn't matter what you say or how you say it, the person on the other end will only understand it to whatever their level is. And I think about, because like lately my idea around my body and my mind, and I've been thinking in my head and using this analogy around like my body, my physical body, and even my thinking is like a pet. It's like having a pet, and I've got to feed it, and I've got to put good stuff in it, I've got to look after it. It's not me, but it is something that I'm in charge of looking after like a pet, and I should love it like a pet. But like a pet, sometimes it's going to pee on the carpet, or sometimes it's going to fucking, you know, not sit and stay, and it's going to, because it's filled with neurochemicals that create behaviors and subconscious stories that it stores, and it reacts to them before my thinking mind or my observer of the thinking mind can take action on it. But what I used to do is, you know, and what a lot of people I think do is, oh, I'm shit. Oh, I've gone to the sugar again. I'm a shit human. Whereas now I go, all right, I still often, if I'm near sugar, will eat it even though I don't want to. But that's okay because I'm really understanding what's driving that, and there's a few different levels of it, and that's cool. I'm just going to take steps towards changing it.
I love that you created your own metaphor. Like, but this is, I mean.
Yeah. But the funny thing, you know, like you would have said in a million different ways in the past and other people, and, you know, there's people always say it, we are not our mind, we are not our body, and it's, they're just words. And then one day I wake up and in my own words, I was like, yeah, it's like I've got this pet. I've got to look after this thing that it was given to me. It belongs to me, but it's not me. And all of a sudden, you know, and when that lands, you're like, oh, I wish everyone knew. It was like, yeah, people have been trying to tell you for 30 years, Tiff. People have been trying to tell you, you wouldn't listen, and they won't be ready either.
That's right. And it's not good or bad, and we're not better or worse. We're just in a different, you know, stage of our journey. And what you did there was you created beautifully, you created a story and a metaphor for you to help you understand a pretty big concept and a pretty big truth, which is, you know, your mind is not you and your body is not you. And, you know, I mean, in Eastern philosophy, they've been teaching and talking about, you know, being the observer of the mind. You know, that's I'm not the mind. I'm not the thought. I have thoughts, but I'm not a thought. I own a business, but I'm not a business. I have money, but I am not money. I even have a body, but I'm not a body, you know, and I have friends, but, you know, all that stuff. And you go, well, where does my sense of self come from? Like, who am I if I'm not all of those things? And these are, this can be a slippery slope and it can be a circular conversation, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't have it, because I believe so many of us go through life being what they think others want us to be. I've disappointed my parents because I had that growing up, because, you know, although I will say my parents got on board pretty quickly, but I remember, you know, the underwhelming kind of emotion that greeted me when I said to mum and dad, guess what? Going to work in a gym. You know, I'm 18 years old. I'm not a dummy. I'm, you know, smart enough. I probably could have done a few better things than fucking picking dumbbells and barbells up off the floor and cleaning pubes out of the spa, let's be honest, right? But that was, for me, that was just what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, and but I knew that it wasn't embraced. And I also knew, also, for example, when I left, and it's not about the church or anything, but I grew up in a very Catholic paradigm. And then I kind of stepped away from that and did something, you know, just another thing that I did, which was in a different religious space, which went down like a cold bucket of spew with the folks. And and then, but what happened was, you know, I wasn't doing anything to rebel. I was doing things because I was curious and I wanted to learn and I wanted to figure out for me, with complete respect to my parents' thoughts and ideas and beliefs and values, which is great, and thank you for the upbringing, and you are ace, and I love you and appreciate you, but also I still want to think for me. I want to think for me. And maybe I'll do a big kind of theoretical, emotional, psychological, spiritual, theological search, and I'll come back to the same place, and I'll go, you were right all along, or maybe some of it and not some of it. But that's the thing with, you know, self-awareness and self-management, self-efficacy, understanding why I am the way that I am without looking to others to tell me who I am. That's so important. Don't let other people tell you who you are. Don't let them tell you who you should be, what you should do. Like this fucking word should. When people go to me and they've said many times a year, and I get all these many times over the years, and I get these responses, people, and they normally do this. They point their finger like I'm pointing at you now, and they go, you know what you should do? And I go, yes, I do. Thanks. And I fuck off. I know exactly what I should do. I should do what I think is the right thing for me based on my values and my internal stuff. That's what I should do. I definitely shouldn't do what you think I should do.
Yeah.
Unless it happens to be the same thing. And that's not because I'm unteachable. That's because unless I'm asking you, I don't want you to come up and tell me what to do with my life. If I want your advice or counsel, I will definitely ask for it. And I do that often with people I trust and respect. But what I don't want to do, I never want to go and tell someone what they should do with their life or their body or their relationships. Like my mission on this show is literally to share thoughts and ideas and stories for people then to put under the microscope.
Yes.
Because you might put something under the microscope that I say and your conclusion might be that's bullshit. And then I go, good, ignore it and fucking move on. Listen to another show or another person. And you should do that because definitely Craig Harper's not the answer to anything or for anyone. All I am is a guy sharing thoughts and ideas and stories that may or may not hit with people. And I get that, right? And this is self-awareness. I know that my stuff resonates with some. I had a beautiful message the other day from a lady, I won't embarrass her, who said, my husband fucking loves you. and it's his birthday coming up, and he's like read all your shit. He comes to your staff and he talks to people about you, and he wears the do the work or shut the fuck up t-shirt. And when the kids are having a meltdown, he gets out one of your books and reads some shit. Like, you know, I won't say his name because I don't want to embarrass him or her, but beautiful, right?
Yeah.
But then there'll be someone at the other end of the scale who goes, you're a fucking egotistical dickhead who thinks that you're smarter than you are. And I don't blame you for thinking that. I'm not hurt. I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at you. Go and listen to someone that you connect with.
Mm.
Don't keep listening to me and sending me shit emails.
It's like, such a learning opportunity, though,
100%.
When someone like triggers you into like, I love that. I love it when watching someone creates a reaction inside me emotionally, because I'm like, oh, wonder what it is about that person or that story or that situation that's getting me offside. Because when you can open that door and learn why, there's probably some progress.
Well, for me, you're right, but two, I expect people not to like me. Not everyone, but I expect it. So I don't get shattered by it. You know, I go, yeah, of course I don't connect with you, or of course, and it's okay. And I think that the real challenge there, right, in that moment, and this sounds like bullshit, but it's really true. The challenge in that moment is to love people. That's what I believe. I believe the easy thing is to then just fire back. Now, I don't mean love what they're doing. I don't mean agree with them. I don't mean love necessarily their value system, but just to respond in love. So many times people have written shit to me that wasn't nice and I responded positively.
Yeah.
And invariably they write back and say, yeah, sorry, I was having a shit morning and that wasn't very nice of me. And yeah, I go, I completely understand it. I have shit mornings too. Enjoy your week. Mm. That's it. And like, let's try, when we talk about things like responding out of love and having a purpose bigger than ourselves and having an awareness and understanding of a reality bigger than my own, right? And being empathetic and kind. Everybody's great at this stuff until it's hard.
Like, I think it's important to say, though, like when you're getting those reactions, like you're not immune. Like, we're hardwired as humans to be part of the tribe and to have a visceral response to rejection. So the fact that you're okay with it means you're sitting with it. It doesn't mean you're not feeling it. So if people are listening to this and going, oh, well, when I get someone that, you know, challenges me or doesn't like me, I have an emotional reaction. Well, I could be wrong, Harps, but I feel like so would you. But you understand that that is actually okay. It's not a threat to who you are. It's not a threat to your thinking. It's just a natural biochemical response inside of your mind and body.
I get upset and I get angry and I get joyful and I get hurt and, you know, about lots of things. But I have so much to learn, but I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of how people work. And I could tell you lots of things that I probably won't on this episode, but
oh, can't harm. Take the lid off. Unpack them.
Really?
Yeah, let them out.
It's all good, but you know, it's you know, I like what. Okay, I'll tell you one of the hard lessons I learned when I was young is that people really wanted me to succeed until I succeeded, and then when I got successful to a level, there were lots of people I just didn't hear from. And people that I thought were friends were definitely not happy for my success. Like so obviously that it made me uncomfortable, right? And the amount of people that, and I don't see myself as overly successful because I've had an equal number of failures as successes. I've said many times how spectacular I am not. And I've also said many times that I'm just good at finishing shit and grinding, right? And I don't think on any level I'm awesome. However, I've done some really good things and I'm proud of. I've written some books that have sold really well. I've worked in some really cool places. I've had some really cool roles and responsibilities. I've built some great shit. I've worked with great people. I'm even proud of this show. We're nearly at 600 episodes. We've worked like motherfuckers to get here. But the amount of people that are genuinely, I don't mean superficially pretend. I mean, they are so happy for you. That ain't many people, right? And so I try not to be like that. And I'm not always great at it, but I genuinely, I know, and I've said this before, I tried being selfish. I tried the selfish model of living. It for me, it didn't work because I was a C word, right? That's what I was. I was no good. Oof. I was. I was just no, I mean, I wasn't a horrible human, but I was so preoccupied with my own comfort and my own convenience and my own ego and my own bank, all of these things. And then I woke up one day metaphorically and I was 30 and I had it all going on and I went, why am I so fucking miserable? And the answer that came over a 10-day on my own reflection was because you're fucking selfish. You're selfish and you're insecure and you've got a big ego and it's all about you. And these are hard things to admit about yourself, but it was all true. And you know what? When you realize something, when something comes up for you about you that's not, you know, positive, you can either get angry or you can get honest, you know, and I've done both, right? But yeah, over the years, it's been, you know, like the, and before anyone misinterprets what I'm about to say, everyone, I'm fine, I'm good, I'm genuinely happy, my life is good. But the amount of people who ring me to go, mate, how are you, is like 1 in 100. The amount of people who ring me who want something is 99. You know, and you get to that, and that's okay too, because I love people and I love helping people. But yeah, it's sometimes it's lopsided. It's lopsided. Yeah. And people, oh yeah, but you're you. You're you though. And yeah, I'm good. I'm good. And I'm very grateful. And I genuinely am grateful and I genuinely am good. But at the same time, even when people are not supportive or not happy for my success, even in the middle of that, I definitely don't want bad for them. I want good for them. But I also understand how resentment works. I get it. I get it. I get it, you know. But I know that, you know, it's like, for example, here's a really practical example. So you have your own podcast. There are lots of podcasters that wouldn't work with you because you have your own podcast, right? And I promote your podcast. Now, you're doing workshops online. I do workshops online. Now, you're doing mentoring groups online. I do mentoring groups online. Guess what? I want you to do great. And you're doing the same thing and you're tapping into often the same or similar audience, right?
Yeah.
I don't care because I want you to succeed. And if you end up doing better than me, good. Like genuinely, good. It's not like there's a shortage of humans that we can tap into. And if you end up doing better than me, then you should do better than me, right? This is a, like, I believe that, and I'm going deep now, this is just what I believe. Like every religion that I've explored, and I've fully immersed myself in quite a few things that I won't bore people with again. But the underlying message of most religions, most theology, I'm not talking about the people. Don't confuse the people or the buildings with the religion, right? With the theology of the religion, with the text. And I'm not saying all theological text is uplifting or even positive or good. But there's a constant theme in all theological texts, which is essentially love. Mm-hmm. It is love. And love is not, you know, like in the New Testament, in Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 14, I think it is, it talks about love and it says, it describes what love is, and it's a multitude of things. It's not a single thing. But I believe that the panacea to much of what we have on an individual level and on a collective level in our world, I believe the answer is, and it sounds cheesy and lame and spiritual and fucking unicorns and fairy dust, and I get it, but it is actually coming from a place of love. And it's almost the hardest thing to do for humans. because we are wired to be on a level selfish. We are wired to be self-serving and self-protecting, you know, and so am I. So there are times when I feel like saying something to someone which would sound quite reasonable, but I actually know it's coming from a place of resentment or a place of perhaps annoyance or something. And so I tend to flip that around. Gets down off soapbox. This is also when you come down to, and this, you know, this evolves. Part of this is, well, what are my values? Because when we talk about who am I, well, hopefully on a level we are a reflection of our values.
Yeah.
Right. Who I hope that, by the way, I'm not saying this falsely. I'm as flawed as anyone I know. But what I do try very hard is I do try to be a reflection behaviorally, socially with others of my values. Mm. And so when you say, well, one of my values is love and compassion and kindness and service, well, you better fucking deliver, because otherwise that's just words in the air and you're a fraud.
Yeah.
And I always talk about it, so I better fucking do it. I better fucking do it.
I really relate to that. I think it was last week when we had a chat on the phone, and I'd had a couple of days feeling a bit overwhelmed, feeling tired, I had a big cry one night, and I remember texting a friend and I was like, I'm just so sick of being in this life alone. Like, I'm just so sick of being the only one on my team. I'm really tired, and had a big sook that night. And then the next day I had some meetings with some people, and genuinely there were a couple of people that had contacted me and we caught up, and they were very MIFO. They wanted to help, and they wanted to, and not with any prompts for how I was feeling. They were just like, hey, I wanted to catch up. I had this idea, blah, blah, blah. And then that night in bed, I laid in bed and I was like, wow, this person and this opportunity. And I would just counted all the people that were kind of sitting on the outskirts, reaching out with a bit of help. And I was like, look at the way my story was 2 days ago. No one this, no one that. And the thing is, I create that story and I create that wall and I create that isolation. And it's been a protective mechanism I've had for years. And I fight that now, and it's hard. It's hard, but it literally, and this is what this whole topic's about, the difference between my abilities one day to my abilities the next, given what I focus on. And then I laid in bed and went, fucking hell, Tiff, are you helping others?
Mm.
Are you reaching out? Like, who is just sitting on the perimeter that you could just give a little few words of encouragement to? Mm. Who needs you? Mm. Because I don't know, I guess I've felt a lot of people wanting help and asking advice, and it's been very wanting to learn, which is really great. But I just felt it was deciphering the feelings and the triggers and the way I was thinking about it. And,
do you know what's interesting about you? This will make you laugh, right?
Oh, shit.
This is what I think, right? I could be wrong, but this is part of the challenge for you. Because you're a little bit complicated in this space with relationships.
Fucking no.
Well, that's no fucking revelation to you. You know that, right?
Yes.
But this is you. You've got a T-shirt on that says, bring it in and give me a hug, but you've got a cap on that says, fuck off.
Yeah.
Right? That's you.
Yep.
Because part of you's like, oh, I love you, give me a hug. Oh, and part of you's like, no, don't get close to me. Fuck off. You're going to hurt me. Right? So there's this dichotomy, there's this battle, and this is many people.
Yeah.
Like, on the one hand, we want love and connection and intimacy and belonging and da 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 da, but I don't want to open the door because you might hurt me, so fuck off, right?
You know, there was a time, I've never even tell you this, there was a time when we first started working together and I would call you a lot, you know, I was like, we'll check in with some phone calls or whatever. And there was one day I was feeling really flat and I was like, I haven't even spoken to Harps for 3 days and I was feeling really miserable. And then I don't know whether I called you or you called me and you kind of joked like, oh, you know, forgot my number. But I hang up the phone and I was like, I think that Harps wanted me to call, but I was over here being miserable for a few days, feeling like no one gives a shit and, you know, like that he needs to call me. I was like, fuck your insecure, Tiffany. Like, just pick up the phone. And I do that all the time because reaching out is hard, right? There's all this stuff that I'm learning about myself.
Yeah.
And sometimes it gets to points where I go, okay, I know that's happening, but it's still hard to change it in the moment or take action. But, you know, just noticing it, I think, changes things.
And I think also, and I completely understand it, and I've had many people in my life over the years, like for a minute or for a long time, you know, that you give them a bit of love and, you know, which is just like, you know, give them a shout out or do something, whatever, nice for them. And there might be a person that you see for 3 minutes in your life or somebody that you have a longer relationship with. And just to be able to do, I love doing things for people where there's nothing in it for me and there can't be anything in it for me. And they know that, you know. And this lady that I did a favor for yesterday, I recorded a video for her husband. We won't say their name. I recorded a video for her husband for his birthday and she wanted to pay me. I'm like, well, you're definitely not paying me, so fucking relax, right? And then, you know, do you know how hard it is for me to talk for 2 minutes into a phone? It's like having a poo. It's like not hard, right? There's a metaphor. There's a fucking analogy, right? But don't put your face in your hands. But then she sends me a message going, you're amazing. Thank you. And firstly, not amazing. Secondly, like, how can I repay you? I'm like, have a good day. That's how you can repay me. I don't want anything. And I don't mean this to sound, I feel like I'm pumping up my tires now. I don't mean that. I'm just talking about just being able to, I love being able to do things for people where they know that there's no agenda to this at all. And there can't be. And then they go, fuck, somebody that I don't know, somebody that I look up to, somebody that I think is a good human cares about me enough to reach out and do something for me. Oh, wow, maybe I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm a good person. And that's the thing. When you are in a position of power or leadership, and by that I mean you could be a school teacher, you could be a coach. I don't mean you're the prime minister or you're, you know, whatever, Russell Brand. I don't know why he came to mind. But when you are in a position where people look up to you and you just, without, you know, prompting, you just reach out to them and just do something, and it doesn't need to be ongoing, and you don't need accolades and you don't need a round of applause. You just do something and then step the fuck back and fuck off. Like, that is so great and so powerful for people. Because you think, I don't know if you've had a moment in time where, like, I've had people who've come up to me and gone, oh, Harps, I saw you in Ballarat 8 years ago. I'm like, fucking hell, I can't remember last Tuesday, motherfucker. All right. And then they tell me word for word this 2 minute conversation we had. You said this and I said that and you said that and you told me to try this and then I did that and then I wanted you. And I'm like, God. And they're like, well, I just want to thank you because it worked out. And I'm like, oh, awesome. And you realize I had a conversation with this person 8 years ago and I paid attention to them and I looked them in the eye and I gave them some advice and I gave them a hug and then they went on their way. But that impacted them. So that tiny investment on my part becomes significant for others. And I had that growing up where I had older people in my life that I looked up to. Whenever they would take 2 minutes to just be present with me, it was like cold water for somebody who was fucking dying of thirst. That's what it was like.
I can remember the day when you phoned me when I'd reached out asking for help with a speaker bio and you rang me and you talked me through it and you gave me some advice and you said you'd spend some time even helping me rewrite it and you pumped up my tires. And I can remember where I was standing and pacing up and down the street as I was like, I can remember that like it was yesterday. It's really funny how, you know, we've had heaps more interactions around that time before that, after that, but that is one because it just meant so much. Like those tiny micro moments where you go to the next level. I'm like, all right, well, I'm doing this because like Craig's just given up some of his time to make this phone call to me.
It's nice when people do that. All right, so maybe we're done. Purpose. Who am I? What am I about? What are my values? What's my path? I wrote a few notes for myself. I reckon we're just about done. But anyway, folks, I hope you got something out of that. How long have we been talking?
About an hour and 15.
Oh, is that one episode or two?
Oh, you might have to ramble on a bit longer.
It's tough. We might need to wind it up. I don't want to talk for the sake of talking. All right, everyone, I hope you got something out of that or some things out of that. And more importantly, I hope the stuff that resonated for you, the stuff that spoke to you, that you can do something with that positive and, you know, maybe help yourself or help someone else. Tiffany Ann Cook, good work as always.
Thanks, Uncle Harps.
Thanks, love. Thanks, everyone. Love your collective gutses. Over and out. Love, Harps and Tiff.